Looking inside her visor, nothing there. Play it out front to the volleyball line. This is Owen Eiler. Back over, Brockman rises and fires. Three, knocks it down. Wyatt Brockman with his first tray of the night, his 14th of the season. And Beloit is up 12, 24 to 12.
There we go. Beloit winning last night in the end in their first game on the boys' side of the Orange and Black Classic as the Trojans pick up the victory over Goodland by a final of 42 to 23. The Goodland girls won 53 to 15 in the opening game of the Orange and Black Classic over the Beloit Lady Trojans. Beloit knew it was going to be a tough matchup there, and they fall in that one 53-15. Again, welcome into the sports ticket here on Katy Country 94 as we have more results that we'll get to you. We're going to preview the Friday high school hoops on Katy Country 94 and Z96.3 The Lake from the MPL tournament and the Orange and Black Classic out at Colby. Also, high school wrestling. The Beloit Invitational will be getting this afternoon, and we've got a preview of that as well. And then we'll go to the NFL playoffs and the Sunflower Showdown coming up in men's hoops on Saturday between Kansas and Kansas State. So stay tuned for all of that. And again, at the end of the show, we'll give a quick update on how the Australian Open is going, as the defending champion on the women's side has actually been upset here today in, I think, day five, I believe, is what we're on here at the Australian Open in tennis. Again, high school hoops from Thursday in the area. The Goodland girls winning 53 to 15 over Beloit. Concordia won their first game of the Salina Invitational Tournament by a final of 41 to 39. So Concordia moving on to the championship side of the bracket. On the girls' side, there was an upset last night. Now, I don't know if you call it an upset, but I mean, based on the rankings, you obviously would call it an upset at the Sterling Invitational, where Southeast of Saline from the NCAA handed number one Hugoton in Class 3A their first loss of the season. An impressive win for the Lady Trojans of Southeast as they beat Hugoton in overtime 61-58. They used an outstanding third quarter to create some separation, and it ended up with the win. The Southeast boys actually lost to Hugoton last night 64-53, so Southeast of Saline will move to the third-place game on the boys' side today, and the girls will play for the championship against the host school Sterling coming up here later this evening. So interesting results there at the Sterling Invitational as well on Thursday. Other boys scores from the area, as we mentioned, Beloit won over Goodland 42-23. Russell beat Smith Center 73-36. In the Mid-Continent League, the final game of kind of consolation, part of that tournament, or the feather bracket, whatever you were calling it, the Mid-Continent League tournament that was in Stockton last night. And Concordia lost their game to Wichita South 59-43 in the first round of the Salina Invitational Tournament there yesterday as well. So that's a look at one of the scores from yesterday in the area. Again, Wade Gerstner was calling the action. He'll be back out there today at the Orange and Black Classic in Colby, and he just stayed out west. That's why I'm here hosting the show this morning. So we had a chance, Wade, give a recap of all of that. We're going to go ahead and have Wade kind of recap what happened in last night's games between Beloit and Goodland.
The Beloit girls and boys basketball teams participating in the Orange and Black Classic in Colby on Thursday evening. Both teams matched up against Goodland in the boys' game. Beloit wins their eighth in a row. They're now 9-2 as they knock off Goodland 42-23. Goodland with just 8 made field goals the entire game. It was 7-7 to end to 1. Wyatt Brockman scored a bucket to close out the first half, made it 17-12. Beloit scored the first 13 points of the third quarter, outscored Goodland 13-2 in the third, and go on to win it by a final of 42-23. It was Goodland's lowest output of the year, and just 8 made field goals on the night for the Cowboys, who scored just 2 points in the third quarter and also turned over 6 times in that third quarter. Wyatt Brockman, the only player in double figures for both teams, he had 17 points, 14 in the second half, 2 3-pointers. He was our SNS Drug and Home Health Athlete of the Game. The HR Block of the game went to sophomore Bryce Beisner. Cunningham telephone cable connection in the game, Bryce Beisner to Owen Eilert for a bucket in the third quarter as Beloit wins 42-23 over Goodland. They'll take on the 6th-ranked team in the state in 5A, Hayes High, coming up on Friday, which you can hear on Z96.3 Lake at approximately 4:45, and live video stream at ncksports.com, via the Beloit Trojan channel. In the girls' game between Beloit and Goodland, it was all Goodland. The Cowgirls, the 4th-ranked team in the state in 3A, 9-1. They blow out Beloit by a final of 53-15. The game was tied at 7 apiece on a 3-pointer by Tatum Tejas-Peters, but Goodland then scores 41 of the next 47 points. They outscore Beloit 21-3 in the second quarter, 17-3 in the third, and win it going away. Running clock of the fourth quarter, 53-15, lowest offensive output of the year for Beloit, as they had just 5 free throws, 2 made 3-pointers, 2 2-point field goals, just 4 field goals, 5 free throws, of offense for Bullitt against a Goodland team that had a ton of size and very athletic. Coach Rima saying after the game that it was the best team that she's coached against in high school, and Goodland is legitimate and a state contender. They're led by SNS Drug and Home Health athlete of the game, Talexa Weeder. She had 22. Emma Lehman chipped in with 16. Goodland now 10-1. The Bullitt girls fall to the consolation side of the bracket. They'll take on Chanute coming up on Thursday at 3 o'clock. We'll have it on the radio, Z96.3 Lake. We may or may not have it on video stream because we'll have to move gym to gym, so we'll see how that works out. Miley Brown had 5 points to lead Beloit. She had a three-pointer, and the block of the game for HR Block and Beloit went to sophomore Marley File, and the Cunningham telephone cable connection the game was the three-pointer by Tatum Tejens from the college line to tie the game at 7 in the first quarter. Beloit girls now 5-6 on the season. Goodland wins 53-15 in the first round of Orange and Black Classic. From Colby, reporting for KD Country 94 and Z96.3 Sports, I'm Wade Gershner.
And again, we thank Wade for that recap of what happened there yesterday for the Beloit Trojans at the Orange and Black Classic. Again, they move on today with matchups, and the Beloit girls will take on Chanute, who lost to Hayes on Thursday, as the Lady Trojans are 5-6. Chanute enters the game at 2-6. That'll be today at 3 o'clock on Z96.3 The Lake, while pregame coverage beginning around 2:50 from Colby. We're hoping to have online video stream on both of these, but Wade's got a lot to do there, obviously, with video stream and radio, and they're in two different gyms. Girls are playing in the auxiliary gym there at the new Colby Events Center, and the boys will be playing in the main gym. So logistically, it might not work out. I know Wade's going to do his best, though, to have video stream as well as the radio broadcast coming up here today on KD Country 94 and NCKSSports.com with the Beloit Trojan channel. Again, the Beloit girls taking on Chanute in the consolation semis at 3 o'clock in Colby. Here this afternoon, pregame coverage beginning at 2:50. Sean Aremus, the head coach of the Lady Trojans, talking about this quick turnaround and the matchup with Chanute coming up today.
You just know going into this that you're going to play three games, and I think it's a very winnable game. And we're excited about the opportunity. You know, you hate to be on the other side of the bracket, but we knew this one was going to be tough, and so we were kind of looking forward to our next opportunity. And I think Chanute will be a good test for us, but I think it's a very winnable game for sure.
So again, Sean Aremus, coach of the Beloit Lady Trojans, here on the matchup with Chanute coming up this afternoon. Again, the Beloit Trojan boys picking up the win over Goodland, so they moved on to the next round of the Orange and Black Classic on the championship side of the bracket, where the Trojans are coming into this game now with a record of 9-2. They'll play Hayes High, who won over Liberty, Colorado in a big way there on Thursday, and Hayes is ranked number 6 in Class 5A. It's definitely an uphill battle, it seems like, for the Trojans against a very experienced and very talented Hayes team, but an opportunity nonetheless for Hayes today, and Ryan Eiler, head coach of the Trojans, spoke on that.
They're good. The kid inside's big and wide, and their guards are real smart and able to find him, and they penetrate it really well and shoot it, and then they defend. And so, you know, one of the reasons you come out here is to see competition like that. No, it's going to be a good challenge, and hope our kids are up to it, and we'll see what happens.
It's Ryan Eilert again, Beloit Trojan head coach. Again, the boys around 4:45 this afternoon from the Colby Events Center main gym. Beloit against Hayes in the semifinals of the Orange and Black Classic. Yeah, you can find everything you need to know about high school sports. The midseason tournament brackets are all posted at nckssports.com. Coming up today in the Mid-Continent League, the Smith Center Lady Red face Hoxie in the semis of the MCL tournament in Plainville around 3 o'clock today. Also, the Concordia girls will play Solana Central in the semis of the SIT at Kansas Wesleyan at 6 o'clock. The Concordia boys face Solana South on the Cougars' home floor at 7:30 in the consolation semis. Again, all the latest in local sports midseason tournament brackets and more can be found at nckssports.com. We have coverage of the Northern Plains League tournament coming up today on KD Country 94. We'll have the third-place games and championship games from Lincoln High School coming up here this afternoon and evening. The other games that are going on are at the elementary school there in Lincoln. We can tell you that Rock Hills boys are not playing. They were scheduled to play Southern Cloud in a consolation game today. That has been canceled because Southern Cloud doesn't have enough players to get there yet again here for today's contest. So, again, no game there as far as the Rock Hills boys are concerned. Consolation part of the tournament there at Sylvan Lucas High School. But again, 7th and 5th place games will take place at Lincoln Elementary. The girls' 7th place game, Thunder Ridge against Tescott at 3 o'clock. And then around 4:30, the boys' 7th place game between Wilson and Lincoln. 5th place game on the girls' side between Lakeside and Rock Hills around 6 o'clock this evening. And the 5th place boys' game around 7:30 at the elementary school. Pike Valley will take on Thunder Ridge here this evening to wrap up that portion of the tournament. Again, we have third place and championship games on Kitty Country 94 and kittycountry94.com. Pre-game coverage beginning at 2:50 and tip-off at 3 o'clock for our girls' third-place game between 3-5 Lincoln and 6-3 St. John's Tipton. It's the first meeting of the season between the two squads. We're looking forward to that one again at 3 o'clock. Then around 4:30 on Kitty Country 94, Lakeside is 7-4, taking on St. John's Tipton, who's 6-3. In the third-place game on the boys' side, again, the first meeting between the two teams. Looking forward to this matchup as well. These two teams have always played what seemed to be very hotly contested and very good contests between Lakeside and St. John's Tipton, especially of recent in the past couple of years. So we're looking forward to the matchup and seeing how that one will go for third place between the Lakeside and St. John's Tipton boys. Championship games coming up here tonight. Sylvan Lucas against Osborne in both the girls and boys championship game. One of the interesting things when you look at this girls championship game, Sylvan Lucas comes in at 9-1, Osborne's 10-1. This is the 10th tournament that's been played in the Northern Plains League. It should be the 11th, but this is number 10 because last year's was canceled. The league started back in 2011-12 season. Lincoln girls won the first MPL tournament championship, and they also won the second. They got back-to-back championships on the girls' side in 12 and 13. And then from 14 through 2020, it was all Thunder Ridge. They won seven straight tournaments, so only two schools have ever won the Northern Plains League tournament on the girls' side. So that's the significance of 2021, is we're guaranteed to have a new champion on the girls' side, just the third time that it's happened since the league tournament began back in 2012. Sylvan Lucas and Osborne are taking their shots. This is the first time Sylvan Lucas has ever played in the game. Osborne's been there multiple times. Craig Batch, actually, this is Osborne's, I think it's their third year in a row at least. I didn't have that sheet right in front of me as I'm prepping and have that over in the other room. But, again, it's at least the third year in a row that Osborne's made it to the Northern Plains League Tournament Championship game, or third tournament in a row. Again, didn't have one last year. But Sylvan Lucas again making their first ever appearance in the MPL Tournament Championship. And their head coach, Craig Batchman, on what his team needs to do in this Osborne matchup.
They're a good team. They're just well-rounded all the way through. They're pretty aggressive. So we got to make sure that we come out and we handle that press, you know, match their intensity and just get, you know, continue to play our defense like we're capable of. And that's what I told the girls, you know, it's going to be a battle. We just got to make sure we show up and we can't have the little mistakes that we've been having occasionally. We just got to be ready to go.
So when Lucas comes into this game on a 9-game winning streak, they lost their first game to Bennington, but they've won 9 in a row since then. So a great start here for Sylvan Lucas to this season. And obviously, again, their opportunity here in the Northern Plains League Tournament Championship. Trina Luter is the head coach of the Osborne Lady Bulldogs, giving her thoughts on what her team will need to do today and this evening to have success against the Sylvan Lucas Lady Mustangs.
We do know that we need to get in and play tough defense is what's going to make our offense happen, and we get in our goal that we've been setting for ourselves, that we're just going to get in and we're going to outwork any team that we happen to see on the floor. And I think if we come in and we maintain that focus, and again, we have people step up into roles and take care of their piece of the puzzle, it's just things are clicking the way we need to. I think it'll be a good game on Friday.
Osborne coming into the game at 10-1. Again, their lone loss to St. John's Tipton was last Tuesday, January 11th. They avenged that loss this past Tuesday, this Tuesday, I should say, against the Lady Jays in the semifinals to advance to the championship game. Again, Osborne 10-1, Sylvan Lucas 9-1. Girls' championship tips around 6 o'clock tonight from Lincoln High School. Again, on the boys' side, the championship also the Mustangs and Bulldogs. Sylvan Lucas is 9-1. Osborne enters the game at 10-0. 7:30 approximate start time tonight from Lincoln High School for this championship game. Jeff Starkey, the head coach of the Sylvan Lucas Mustangs, knows that Osborne will be a challenge for his squad.
We just got to continue to keep what we're doing. We got to be able to, you know, play five guys against theirs because, you know, I think individually they're really talented and, you know, they're a group that, you know, hasn't been beaten yet. And, you know, we just got to take a swing at it and see how we do.
And, again, Sylvan Lucas, just like their girls on the boys' side, they've won 9 in a row. They started 0-1 with a loss to Bennington, but 9 straight heading into this championship game of the Northern Plains League tournament. Again, Osborne 10-0, as you just heard Coach Starkey saying, they haven't been beaten yet this year. Bulldogs at 10-0, and Jamie Walters on some of the keys against Sylvan Lucas.
Really disciplined and, you know, going to get the shot that they want. Each trip down, we've got to be disciplined defensively. They've run a lot of backdoor stuff, and they cut really well. Of course, We struggled with that last year, but also, you know, they've got some younger guys, and it seems like they're all playing a little better than what they did last year and taking a step forward like they should. And, of course, defensively, they're going to be really sound defensively, so we're going to have to be a little more patient and move the ball better.
And Jamie Walters, coach of the Bulldog boys basketball team. Osborne is looking for their fourth straight Northern Plains League tournament championship. Again, they won it in 18, 19, and 20. On the boys' side, it really, we talked about the girls. By the way, this is the third consecutive tournament that Osborne girls have made it to the championship game. They lost to Thunder Ridge. Thunder Ridge dominated both of those games in 2019 and 2020. So this is a 2021, again, no tournament. So 2022, the Lady Bulldogs looking for the win there. Sylvan Lucas, again, making their first appearance in the NPL tournament championship game. But again, on the boys' side, there's only been four tournament winners. Sylvan Lucas won the first tournament, Rock Hill was the second, and then St. John's Tipton won four straight from 14 to 17, and then from 18 to 20, it was Osborne winning three in a row. They did have a challenge against St. John's Tipton, I remember, in 2019. They kind of methodically beat Sylvan Lucas in 2020, so it's a rematch of the 2020 championship game. So the last two in the Northern Plains League have been Osborne against Sylvan Lucas. And, again, the Bulldogs looking to win their fourth straight Northern Plains League tournament coming up here this evening. So we're looking forward to all the coverage here today, and I hope you are too. We have, again, Osborne and Sylvan Lucas in the championship games, and then we'll get things started. St. John's Tipton Lincoln girls pregame 2:50 and tip-off at 3 o'clock here this afternoon on Katy Country 94, followed by the St. John's Tipton Lakeside boys for third place, and again, Osborne and Sylvan Lucas a doubleheader for the championships tonight at the Northern Plains League Tournament at Lincoln High School. You can listen at Katy Country 94 and always online as well at katycountry94.com. All right, so that covers high school hoops. Again, all the latest in high school hoops can be found at ncksports.com. Also today, the Beloit Wrestling Invitational gets underway, the 52nd annual Beloit Wrestling Invitational. There are 21 teams competing at this event this year, and out of those teams, 12 of them are ranked in the top 10 in their classifications, as Hoxie's number 1 and 3-2-1A, Plainville number 2, Silver Lake number 3, Hill City's number 5, Republic County is number 6, Beloit number 8, and Minneapolis number 9 and 3-2-1A. Ranked teams in 4A, Chanute number 2, Colby number 6, Clay Center number 8, Abilene number 9, and Blue Valley Southwest comes into the tournament ranked number 2 in Class 5A. Other teams that are competing but aren't ranked in those top rankings in their classifications still have some quality wrestlers in Concordia, Holcomb, Marysville, Decatur Community, Oberlin, Riley County, Solana South, Smith Center, Stockton, and Topeka West, all competing at this year's Beloit Invitational. Again, 12 of the 21 teams ranked in their team respective classes. And added to that, there are 63 wrestlers that are individually ranked in either Class 5A, 4A, or 3-2-1A that are on teams in the Beloit Invitational as well. So a lot of great, great talent at this tournament. Every year we talk to coaches, and they'll tell us that, hey, this is a tournament that if you can place at this tournament, you should definitely be able to qualify for state and should probably be able to place at state as well. And that's the kind of competition that you're going to see. It is an outstanding group of teams at the 52nd Annual Beloit Wrestling Invitational. As far as our area is concerned, some of the top wrestlers to keep an eye on, we have four of them that are ranked in the area in the top six of their respective classes in Class 3-2-1A. And for Beloit, Tate Cadle is ranked number 3 at 170 pounds. He's 7-2 on the season. And also at 220, Braden Burks is 10-1. He's ranked number 3 in 3-2-1A. And also for the Trojans at 152 pounds, Caden Anderson comes into the tournament at 9-4. He's ranked number 4 in Class 3-2-1A at 152 here this season. For Smith Center, Bentley Montgomery is ranked number 6 at 138 pounds. He has had a lot of matches this year as he comes into the tournament at 23-3. A very front-loaded schedule. They went to some tournaments in Grand Island, Nebraska, and Manhattan, and they've gotten a lot of matches in already this year. Smith Center has. Beloit was kind of hampered by missing out on the tournament at Marysville last week, and they've had some duels instead of some of the bigger tournaments that they've been in here in the early portion of their schedule. They kind of backload with tournaments on their schedule. So, but again, Bentley Montgomery, 138 pounds, 23-3, ranked number 6 in 3-2-1A at 138. Another guy to keep an eye on, actually there's a couple, Luke Franklin at 195 comes into the tournament with a record of 21-5 for Smith Center, but Jake Kirchhoff just got back into things here in the second semester, his senior year just getting underway, and he's 6-0 so far at 182 pounds for Smith Center, so I would think Kirchhoff is a guy you're going to want to look out for here today and through the weekend for the Smith Center Redmen, and also as the second semester rolls on, here in 2022. So, again, a great tournament today, and we had a chance to catch up with Andy Nemchek on our locker room chats earlier this week, and he's excited about the quality of competition at this year's Invitational.
21 teams and just a great array of teams there from all over the state of Kansas, and some of those teams are at the top of their classification. We have some 5A teams, some 4A teams, and the majority are 3-2-1A teams. But it just makes for a great tournament, and each weight class, in my opinion, is going to be really loaded with good quality kids.
Coach Nemchek always loves to host this tournament. They do an outstanding job of hosting there at Bullitt High School. So, again, we're looking forward to this tournament this weekend, and also looking forward to it is Landon Kieswetter, the head coach of the Smith Center Redmond wrestling team.
This year, boys, is going to be really, really tough. But, you know, I expect our kids to go out and compete. And to me, it don't really matter about winning and losing. You know, just when you get all those ranked guys at a tournament, you just want them to go out and just wrestle as hard as they can. And, you know, sometimes a loss is a good loss. So as long as they compete the whole time, just 110% every match, that's all we can ask for.
Again, that was Landon Kieswetter, coach of the Smith Center Redmond. 52nd Annual Bullitt Invitational gets underway this afternoon. The first round at 2 o'clock, followed by the quarterfinals, and then first-round consolation. We'll have updates from the Bullitt Invitational this afternoon and evening. Our first report will be around 2:30, and then updates interspersed with our high school basketball coverage the remainder of the afternoon and evening. Tournament picks back up on Saturday at 10 o'clock in the morning. We'll continue updates through Saturday on KD Country 94 as well, and we'll have high school hoops tomorrow from the boy at the Orange and Black Classic that we'll have to have some of our reports mixed in as well. So stay tuned for all of that. The 52nd Annual Bullitt Wrestling Invitational getting underway today in Bullitt. Again, all the latest and local sports information, visit nckssports.com. All right, we shift gears now as we are getting set for the NFL playoffs, divisional round of the playoffs this weekend. The Kansas City Chiefs are back on the field taking on the Buffalo Bills. It's the last game of the weekend. It'll be on Sunday as it'll kick off at 5:30. And pregame coverage on Z96.3 through the Lake and the Chiefs Radio Network starts at 4 o'clock Sunday afternoon. The Chiefs and Bills getting into this game and diving into it. Again, the Bills won 47-17 over the Patriots. They had seven drives and seven touchdowns at the start of that one and just dominated New England in the wild card round last week in Buffalo. The perfect game. They had no punts, they had no field goals, and just scored touchdowns, right? And that's what the Bills did there on last Saturday night. I'm like, man, my radar's a little off this week. We'll just put it that way. On Saturday, they won 47-17 over the Patriots. Chiefs turned around and won Sunday over the Steelers 42-21 to get to this point and had a dominant performance as well. So both these teams coming in on a high note. It is the second meeting between the two teams this year. Buffalo won 38-20 back in week 5 at Arrowhead Stadium and really dominated that one. The Chiefs were -4 in the turnover category. Did not have any takeaways and gave it away four times. And Patrick Mahomes struggled in the game. A lot of passes, not as many yards as you would expect on a lot of passes, though. He was 33 of 54 for 272, had two interceptions, threw two touchdown passes in the game. But Josh Allen was very efficient with what he did, 15 of 26 for 315 yards and three touchdowns. The Bills just controlled that game against the Chiefs there on the first time around in week 5. And you know, you obviously learn a little bit from that game, but you also move forward knowing that the Chiefs didn't have everybody in that game to their disposal. And it seems like they're going to be as healthy as they possibly can be coming into the game on Saturday or Sunday, excuse me. And coming in, they're generally healthier anyway. Chris Jones didn't play that first time around. Charvarius Ward was out for the squad. Daniel Sorensen at that point was playing 100% of the snaps at safety for some reason that we really couldn't figure out, and now that's not the case. Juan Thornhill's getting in there at safety. You've acquired Melvin Ingram since that first time you played, and that now means that Chris Jones is actually healthy now and playing. We've documented it very well of what that move meant for the Chiefs to bring Melvin Ingram in and move him to the outside and Chris Jones to the inside. Willie Gay is back as well for the Chiefs, hopefully. We're not 100% sure on his status as far as whether he'll play or not. We are assuming that Willie Gay will play. Again, on Thursday afternoon, he pleaded not guilty to misdemeanor charge of criminal property damage of less than $1,000 after he was arrested Wednesday night by police. The 23-year-old was released from the detention center in Johnson County on Thursday afternoon. His agents Max Lepsettler and Ryan Rubin said in a statement that Gay was visiting his son when he got into an argument with the child's mother, who called police. A police report estimated the total property damage at $225 for a vacuum cleaner, cell phone screen protector, humidifier, and damage to a wall and door frame. Willie Gay can pay the $225 for that property damage, I'm going to guess. The mother of Gay's three-month-old son had requested a civil protection order, which means Gay is not allowed to have contact with either of them until the case is heard by a civil judge. Class B non-person misdemeanor constitutes a domestic violence offense. According to court records, he is scheduled to return to court on March 2nd. He was not at practice on Thursday. Nobody said anything about it. Chiefs defensive coordinator Steve Spagnuolo said that he was going to leave that up to Andy Reid. And he said if it happened in a game, it was an injury, we'd just operate that way, but we'll see what happens. It's not an injury. It didn't happen in a game. It happened 3 days before the game. Andy Reid is slated to speak to the media today, and we'll find out later this afternoon, more than likely, Gay's status. Again, I'm anticipating that he'll play Class B misdemeanor. I know that it does qualify under the court records as domestic violence offense. But I wouldn't, it's a misdemeanor. I wouldn't think that's going to hold Willie Gay out of a very important playoff game for the Kansas City Chiefs this weekend. So the point is, he's back in there. Melvin Ingram is at the end, and now you move Chris Jones inside. And this defense is not going to be the same defense that Josh Allen and the Bills saw in Week 5. It's just not. And so that's where you have some, maybe the confidence and saving grace going into this one, that things are a little bit different this time around for the Chiefs against the Bills compared to that Week 5 game. The Chiefs' offense has picked things up as well. They've picked up some steam since that first meeting. They're not turning the ball over nearly as much. As Wade talked about yesterday, there are, you know, still some plays where Mahomes is maybe trying to do too much and will turn the ball over. But you're not seeing the typical turnovers that you saw early in the season, those uncharacteristic, those just bad bounces or balls popping up off the hands of players that usually are going to catch passes, receivers, and or, you know, fumbles that are just not what normally happens. It just seemed like any bounce that could go wrong early in the season for the Chiefs was. They've cleaned that part up, not seen as many turnovers for the Chiefs. Now, hopefully, I'm going to knock on wood, and that'll be the same thing coming up on Sunday. But, again, this team looks much better than they did in Week 5 is basically the point of that. And another thing that they've added since Week 5, obviously, is the dynamic ability of Jerick McKinnon added to what they already have with their offense that the Bills didn't see the first time around. I mean, let's face it, McKinnon, the first time these two teams played, had 3 touches for 15 yards. He was virtually non-existent, was not even a part of what the Chiefs were trying to do offensively. Obviously, that was different on Sunday against the Steelers in the playoff game. He had 18 touches for 142 yards. He had 6 catches for 81 and a touchdown, 12 carries for 61 as well, and again, they're just more dynamic, and you know, that's been the big thing. And we actually had Matthew Derrick on earlier this week kind of talking about Jerick McKinnon and what they can do at that running back position with him being healthy and, you know, kind of stepping in for Darrell Williams or Derek Gore, who maybe more bruising type backs. Darrell Williams for sure, not the guy that's really going to be the big hitter. And Matthew Derrick kind of spoke about Jerick McKinnon and what he's meant to this offense.
The only problem the Chiefs can really get into, to a degree, is that if they do have all these guys healthy and they want to try to play to the strengths of them, you can get pigeonholed into the point where, you know, the Bills could tell a little bit about what the Chiefs are going to do based on who's in on the package. But if it's just going to be McKinnon as the featured back playing most of the snaps, I think that gives the Chiefs a little bit more advantage because, I mean, they do have the flexibility to do a lot of different things. And as good as Darrell Williams has been catching the ball out of the backfield and reliable, you know, McKinnon's a different type of athlete, you know, when he gets the ball into the flat and gets the ball in space. He's really more in the mold of the guys like Hill and Hardman that if you get the ball into space, he's got an excellent chance of making somebody miss and turning it into a big gain. And you saw against the Steelers, there were some times that, you know, McKinnon was just absolutely unaccounted for defensively. And if the Bills do that, then, yeah, there's going to be plenty of room for McKinnon to make some big plays.
So, yeah, Jerick McKinnon adds just to the weapons that the Chiefs have. Tyreek Hill, who had been dealing with a heel injury, by the way, was a full participant in practice there on Thursday. Rashad Fenton at corner did not practice with a back injury. Running back Darrell Williams with a toe injury didn't participate in practice. Clyde Edwards-Helaire did participate fully in practice with his shoulder injury, so it seemed like he may be ready to go for Sunday if they need him. Legarius Sneed with knees that are causing problems, he was a full participant as well. Anthony Hitchens was a limited participant at linebacker. And again, we mentioned Willie Gay was non-injury related, was not a practice due to his arrest, and then released from Johnson County Detention Center there on Thursday. So again, Tyreek Hill kind of getting back into the flow of things. So definitely adding to the dynamic of what the Chiefs can do offensively. We heard from Matthew Derrick on Jerick McKinnon, but Sean McDermott, the head coach of the Buffalo Bills, on this matchup and what the Chiefs have on their roster that causes problems.
Yeah, their quick game is lethal because they can turn a 2-yard catch screen into a big play into a 70-yard touchdown because of the speed that they have on offense. So just an overwhelming amount of weapons on that side of the ball, just to name that side of the ball. But I think Brett Veach has done a great job of putting together a balanced roster, because when you look at special teams in their return game, their kicking game, and then obviously the defense and what they've done with that defensive line this season as well.
And McDermott also kind of discussed it with the Chiefs, so like we talked about, or I talked about moments ago, that Patrick Mahomes is playing much better now. That offense seems to be more in tune, and McDermott on the Chiefs' offense and specifically Mahomes and his ability to keep plays alive.
You know, he's so dangerous in the pocket. He's so dangerous when he extends plays out of the pocket. Andy does such a great job. Andy and Eric, the enemy, do such a great job in being creative with how they – you know, change looks offensively, and then also in the run game with their run game has been, you know, at a high level the last couple of weeks here, and so they're a tough offense to stop.
Sean McDermott, coach of the Buffalo Bills, looking at the Chiefs side of things and seeing what they've got. You know, Andy Reid knows that since this is a second matchup between the two squads, that things might be a little bit different, and each team might be changing things up here in this second game with this rematch at hand for the Chiefs. Here's Andy Reid.
They got after us, so I'm sure they'll change some things. And a little bit like what I said last week, they'll change some things, and we'll change some things. And we've played them so many times here in the last couple of years that you got to kind of mix it up a little bit. So, and I'm sure they feel the same way.
And Reed also happy to have more personnel available here in this rematch.
Well, listen, I think the neat part about this game that's coming up here is that both teams are relatively healthy, and at this time of the year, that's a great thing. I mean, it should lead to a heck of a game, and you know, I know the guys that didn't play look forward to the challenge of playing. I mean, it's you love this kind of competition and these kind of games.
The Bills statistically, had one of the best defenses in the league this year. They had the least passing yards allowed, least total yards allowed, least points allowed. They held the Chiefs to 20 points, but they did give up 392 yards despite the Chiefs having four turnovers in the first meeting between the two teams. But Patrick Mahomes, Chiefs quarterback, is expecting some different looks this time from the Bills.
They're going to have changeups, obviously, that they didn't do in the first matchup. They have a good defensive coordinator. They have a good defensive head coach. They have good players over there, so they're not going to sit back and do the same stuff they've done against us before. But they're going to take what they did well and do that and then add changeups in there. And so I'll watch all the previous games that we've played against them these last year and a half pretty much, and then I've watched all the games that they've played since then. And I try to formulate a game plan for myself of what I expect them to do, knowing that they'll have adjustments, and I'll have to make adjustments on the fly during the game.
A lot of hype going into this matchup between Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen as well, and Mahomes discussed seeing Allen. It's the fourth meeting in the last 2 years. The Chiefs won last year in the AFC Championship 38-24 in this meeting. It's funny how everybody's talking about how really, really good Josh Allen is, right? Threw for 4,470 yards, 36 touchdowns, 15 interceptions. Mahomes had more yards, more touchdowns, less interceptions, and it was a bad year for Mahomes. 4,839 passing, 37 touchdowns, 13 interceptions for Mahomes this year. They're both great quarterbacks, and both are trying to lead their team to a victory in the divisional round and make it to the AFC Championship. For the Chiefs, they're trying to get there for the fourth consecutive year. Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes on Josh Allen in this matchup.
Yeah, I mean, he's a tremendous player. I actually know him a little bit off the field as well. Great dude. They put a lot on his shoulders, and he rises to the occasion. I mean, he's able to run the ball. He can throw the ball. He has the arm strength to throw anywhere on the football field, and he makes great decisions. So, like you said, we'll probably play them a lot of times. It'll be great competition, and it's definitely a great challenge for us as a team to compete with them.
So that's Mahomes on Josh Allen as the Chiefs and Bills, again, getting set to play on Sunday. We'll have pregame coverage at 4 o'clock and kickoff at 5:30 on Z96 Point through the Lake and the Chiefs Radio Network. I kind of teased yesterday that I was going to wait until today to make my prediction, and this is a tough one. I think this is the first time really since Patrick Mahomes has been the quarterback for the Chiefs where I've kind of wavered a little bit. I probably wavered, I guess, in the Patriots game because it was something that in 2018 in the AFC Championship, because the defense was not good under Bob Sutton, and it was kind of like, can the Chiefs actually do it? Can they get over this hump of beating Tom Brady and move on to the Super Bowl? And I probably wavered there and honestly probably picked the Patriots back then. I don't even remember. The Patriots won, so it probably wiped out anything that I thought would have happened or should have happened or whatever in that game. But since then, man, the Chiefs have been the Chiefs, and they've been able to win these kind of games and show up routinely and regularly in the playoffs under Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid, and under Andy Reid with Patrick Mahomes as quarterback. So it's tough for me to pick against them. I'm kind of like Wade yesterday, where my head is starting to lean a little bit toward Buffalo. My heart is obviously with the Chiefs, and it always is. And especially games like this where you want to believe the best and feel the best about the team that you're looking at and supporting. But I go back to that stat that Wade had yesterday about teams that win by, I can't remember what the number was. I think it was 30 points at home and then go onto the road the next round. They're 2-7 in the next game. So I'm holding on to the hope that Buffalo kind of wasted everything there in the first round and the Chiefs are better defensively, and they're going to be able to make the stops. So I'm going to pick the Chiefs. Wade said 27-24. I still feel like it's going to be maybe a little bit higher than that, but not much. I'm going to pick the Chiefs 31-27. Maybe a Harrison Butker field goal to kind of be a difference maker at some point there late in the game or even early in the game that might help the differential. But 31-27 Chiefs, I'm going to pick to advance to the AFC Championship game for the fourth consecutive year. So hopefully I'm right. We'll see how that all plays out. Chiefs and Bills again, pregame 4 o'clock and kickoff 5:30 Sunday on Z96 Point through the Lake. Quickly going through the other matchups in the NFL playoffs this weekend of the divisional round in the AFC. The Bengals are at the Titans Saturday, 3:30 on CBS. The Bengals and Titans last met last season. They haven't played this year at all. The Bengals won 31-20 over Tennessee a year ago. So the Bengals and Titans, this is the first playoff matchup between the two franchises since the Titans were the Houston Oilers back in 1991. The Bengals won 41-14 with Boomer Esiason as their quarterback back in 91 over the Oilers. So there's not a lot of history between these two teams. Should be an interesting game, though, Saturday at 3:30. I am going to pick the Bengals to win the game. I don't know why. I just, 4 years in a row, AFC Championship at Arrowhead Stadium. Let's do it, right? I'm going to pick the Bengals to beat the Titans. Saturday night, 49ers at Packers at 7:15 on Fox in the NFC divisional round. Packers won 30-28 back on September 26th in San Francisco. But the last time the two teams met in the playoffs, everybody might remember the dominant performance from the 49ers over the Packers, 37-20 in the 2020 NFC Championship game. And the 49ers made it to the Super Bowl only to lose to the Chiefs. 49ers-Packers Saturday, 7:15. I'm going to pick Green Bay at home in this one. Should be a very, very good game. I'm definitely looking forward to that one. And then the Rams-Buccaneers Sunday at 2 o'clock on NBC. The Rams won 34-24 back on September 26th in L.A. This game's in Tampa against the defending Super Bowl champions. Only other playoff meeting in history was back in 2000, the 1999 season. People remember the greatest show on turf, and the Buccaneers had one of the best defenses to ever play. And Rams won 11-6 in the NFC Championship game. I remember Martin Gramatica, a former K-Stater, playing in that game, and that kind of made me be a little bit of a Buccaneers. Well, actually, I was a fairly decent Buccaneers fan at that point because they were drafting some K-State guys, and they were definitely my second team behind the Chiefs. And I was excited when they won the Super Bowl. Then a couple years later, I am not excited about Buccaneers football anymore with Tom Brady on their team. They're not my second team any longer because it's just a different group, right? Rams Buccaneers Sunday at 2 o'clock. I want to pick the Rams so bad, but for some reason I'm leaning toward the Buccaneers, and I'm going to say they're going to win that one coming up on Sunday, at 2 o'clock in Tampa. So I've got the Packers, Buccaneers, Bengals, and Chiefs as winners and headed to championship weekend next weekend in the NFL. All right, we'll quickly preview coming up this weekend. The K-State men's basketball team and KU men's basketball teams are in action. The first Sunflower Showdown of the 2021-22 season. In men's hoops on Saturday, it's at Bramlage Coliseum. KU comes in number 7 in the country, 15-2, 4-1 of the Big 12. K-State is 10-7 and 2-4. They've had two straight wins against top 25 teams, though, against Texas Tech at home last Saturday, and then Texas on the road on Tuesday. They won that game. So two straight wins against top 25 teams. K-State trying to salvage their season. KU's won 5 straight in this series, 13 of the last 14. K-State's last one came on February 5th of 2019 in Manhattan, a 74-67 win. If you remember that, that's when Cartier Jai had the windmill dunk that was kind of the exclamation point. Still probably the only thing I remember him for at K-State was that singular dunk. His tenure or time at K-State did not end in very good fashion. We'll just put it that way. But again, that was the last time K-State won back in 2019. Again, KU's won 13 of the last 14. We know the series history is slanted toward Kansas at all times, and this is the first meeting here in 2022. We had Brian Haney on to discuss the matchup, and he says, hey, KU's not overlooking K-State.
Noel's a kid that's the transfer from Little Rock that Bill Self has talked about on numerous occasions as one of the great new players in our league. And obviously, big game the other day out of Pack and Smith. And there's personnel on this team that's way better than what we saw a year ago when we went in there, a year ago when Kansas swept the Cats. And so they clearly have the Jayhawks' respect and attention. And I'm glad that they've won these last two games because, they always get up for the Kansas game, especially in Manhattan. Doesn't mean they always play well or always win, but this is always the biggest game on their schedule, and had, they've been kind of sleepwalking through at 0-4 like they were a week ago without the upset of Tech, which I didn't get to watch that game live, but I saw some highlights, and it seemed like the building was half empty, and, yeah. They had, the lights out in certain portions of unattended sections. If they were still going through that, then maybe this is a game where KU is overlooking them and the Jayhawks maybe are overly confident. But when you beat Texas Tech, fresh off Tech beating Baylor, and then you beat a Texas team down in Austin that I have a ton of respect for, clearly Kansas is going to be dialed in.
So Brian Haney again on the matchup, KU not overlooking K-State, and Bill Self, KU coach, kind of echoing that, knowing Kansas State a little bit better than what their record shows.
They could be 3-2 easily. Yeah, they Bruce has done a good job with that team, and they're getting better, and they got that little transfer from Little Rock that's just totally changed the personality of their team from an aggressiveness standpoint. So I like their team, and it'll be a hard game.
Self talking about Marquise Noel, the transfer from Little Rock, as, again, K-State has definitely made the improvements. So you heard Brian Haney talking about Noel and Mark Smith and the guys that have come in as well. For this K-State squad this year, a little different looking talent, but they to start the Big 12 season had not been able to put that together, and even in close games in the non-conference. So we'll see if they can continue on the right path. Here's Bruce Weber talks about that, hoping to stay in the right frame of mind and stay in the right direction here.
We crawled out from the hole. Now we got to keep it moving forward. Obviously, another ranked team. We're going to have great discipline. We're going to have great toughness, and we got to stop them. They're one of the best offensive teams in the country and can really shoot the basketball. They've kicked our butt, and I told them that. I tell you, hey, guys, it's a reality. They've kicked your butt. Now you got to play the right way. Now you can't get emotionally drunk. You got to keep playing just like we did against Texas Tech, just like Texas, and see if we can fight them and get a win.
Bruce Weber, K-State coach. Again, Kansas and Kansas State, my pick. Hey, I'm going to tell you, listen, Wade says K-State fans don't have faith in their own team, and there's a little bit of a reason for that over the last 3 years. I get it in the past. I completely understand that. I think sometimes when you feel like you're down, you overlook, and you just feel like you're really, really down, and this team just can't climb out of anything, right? They do have two very impressive wins. I'm not going to take that away from them over the last two games against Texas Tech and Texas on the road, Texas Tech at home, who'd, at that point, everybody was saying they might be playing the best ball in the country at the time, and they bounced back with a nice win after the K-State loss. But, again, when you've lost 13 of 14 and 5 straight against KU, your only win, they're 74-67 with a pretty good team in 2019, and it's tough to pick K-State to win in this series at any point in time. There's been times where, you know, teams under Frank Martin, you believe that they probably had the chance to win. Teams under Bruce Weber, other teams that they've had, have a very good chance to win. You know, K-State's shown me a little bit, obviously, over the last couple games, but I'm still going to pick Kansas to win this one. I think K-State will put up a fight. I'll pick KU by 7. I don't know what the spread is. I didn't have a chance to look that up, but I'll pick KU win by 7. In Manhattan coming up on Saturday. The game on Z96.3 Through the Lake. Pregame coverage at 2:30. Tip-off at 3 o'clock from Bramlage Coliseum. All right, wrap the sports ticket with a quick look at the Australian Open. The defending women's champion, Naomi Osaka, was upset today by Amanda Anisimova from the U.S. in three sets. It was a 10-5. That can't be right, can it? It was a 7-6 tiebreak win in set number 3. And again, Osaka won the first set, and Anisimova took the next two to win it and move on to the fourth round. Also, Ash Barty, the number one seed, picked up a straight set win over Camilla Giorgi today. So Ash Barty moves on to the fourth round. Still to come later today on the women's side, Arena Sabalenka against Marketa Vondrousova. Sabalenka is the number two seed in the tournament. On the men's side so far today, Pablo Carreño Busta winning over Sebastian Corda from the U.S. in four sets. Alexander Zverev, the number three seed, a three-set win to move on. Rafael Nadal took a four-set win over Karen Khachanov to move on. Nadal, the sixth seed, and moving on to the fourth round. A couple other notable matchups coming up later. Taylor Fritz is number 20 seed against 15 seed Roberto Bautista Agut. That's at 10 o'clock tonight. And Daniil Medvedev will play at 10 o'clock tonight as well. He's the number two seed. And four seed Stefanos Tsitsipas will play at 10 o'clock this evening also. That's what the schedule says anyway on different courts there. Here this evening at the Australian Open. So we'll keep an eye on that as it continues to go. Again, we're just in week one here, day five of the Australian Open today. And again, Naomi Osaka has been upset, added to the Garbina Muguruza upset earlier this week, the number three seed. So we're seeing some upsets there at the Australian Open, as you tend to always do, whether it's men's or women's side. Again, no Novak Djokovic this year in the Australian Open because his visa was rejected because he's not vaccinated, so he didn't have a chance to defend his Australian Open title. So, again, Australian Open will continue on through next week, and championship will be next weekend. So, again, that'll wrap it up here today on the Sports Ticket. We thank you for tuning in. Don't miss our coverage of high school hoops coming up today on Katy Country 94 and Z96.3 Through the Lake. Hopefully online video stream at ncksports.com with the Bullet Trojan channel, the Bullet Girls, 250 pregame and tip-off at 3 o'clock as they take on Chanute this afternoon from the Orange and Black Classic on Z96.3, and then following that, the Bullet Boys against Hayes High. We have Northern Plains League Tournament third-place games and championships coming up today as well, and those are at beginning with coverage at 2:50 this afternoon. Thanks to everybody for tuning in to the Sports Ticket today on Katy Country 94.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.